This is an ABC podcast.
National Reconciliation Week is a time to reflect on how to create a more just and equitable nation. Of course, to achieve that goal, we need to learn from our failures. Welcome to The Law Report. I'm Damien Carrick. Today we're talking about two recent, very significant coronial inquests. And a warning, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples should be aware that this program and the Law Report website contain images and names of people who've passed away and that traumatic events will be described. One of the inquests focused on the death of Tanya Day, a proud Yorta Yorta woman, who just before Christmas 2017 died after falling in a Victorian police cell. She was 55 years old. The other inquest focused on Naomi Williams, a 27-year-old pregnant Wiradjuri woman. The disability support worker died of sepsis in hospital in the town of Tumut in regional New South Wales on New Year's Day 2016. Both families of the deceased asked the coroner to make findings about unconscious bias or racism. Sharon Williams is Naomi's mum. Sharon, what was your daughter like?
My daughter was a beautiful, bright, smart young woman. Throughout this interview, I'll probably refer to her as May. That was what we called her. She was 27 when she died, and she was also pregnant with her first child, my first grandchild. She had presented a number of times to the hospital before she passed away, and she had a pre-existing condition. She had her gallbladder removed some years before that. Each time she presented to the hospital, she was actually referred to drug and alcohol services and mental health services.
They made an assumption that she was drug dependent and sent her to drug and alcohol counselling. But when she went to those services, she was assessed and they said, no, she's not drug dependent. I believe in the last 7 months of her life, she went to the hospital something like 18 times. What kind of treatment did she receive at the hospital, Sharon?
The same sort of treatment over and over again. She was trying to explain to them what her symptoms were. She basically felt that, you know, they weren't hearing her. They were stereotyping her as a drug user to the extent where she actually felt unsafe to go back there to get more treatment.
Sharon, you actually emailed the hospital saying, look, please take her symptoms seriously. Please refer her to a specialist. What response did you receive when you tried to intervene in that way?
Well, before I actually sent the email, I did make a phone call because I live in Canberra and Naomi was in Tumut. I felt myself that I wasn't being taken serious by the nurse that I was speaking to on the phone. Her suggestion was that I speak to her manager, who was actually on leave at that time. So I said, well, I'll send an email and hopefully she'll respond when she gets that. She responded, told me that, you know, all patients receive world-class care. I think the thing for me was that very same person actually sat with Naomi the next time she presented to that hospital. And what did she do? She again referred her to drug and alcohol counselling, as well as mental health. The evidence that she gave at the inquest was it was the right thing to do for Naomi. And again, Naomi wasn't referred to a specialist because I'd talked about her previous problems with the gallbladder.
So essentially, they ignored your attempts to take your daughter seriously. Now look, I might bring Cheryl Penrith in here. You're Sharon's cousin and you were very close to Naomi. You were her mentor, so you would see her once a month. Can you tell me, now in the middle of the year 2015, Naomi became pregnant and she and her partner were very much looking forward to the birth of their first child. But she died on the 1st of January 2016 when she was 22 weeks pregnant. What happened on the night of the January the 1st, 2016?
Well, she'd gotten sick and she presented at the hospital again. And again, they didn't seem to take her seriously. You know, she was having a baby. There was an expectation that her unborn baby would be looked at, that her concerns would be heard, but she got sent home.
She arrived, I think, at just past midnight on the 1st of January 2016, and She was assessed by the triage nurse and the midwife. She was given Panadol and discharged, I think, about an hour later. Yeah. And then at 2:30 that afternoon, she returned to hospital in an ambulance in cardiac arrest, and she died at about 3 o'clock. Lawyer George Newhouse, you act for the family of Naomi Williams. In July 2019, the New South Wales Deputy State Coroner, Harriet Graham, handed down her findings. In a nutshell, what were her findings?
Yeah, thanks, Damien. First of all, I must say it's an incredibly painful experience going through and reliving this event, and it must be extremely difficult for Cheryl and Sharon. But I think they took some comfort from the state coroner, who made some very significant findings, and in particular that Naomi died as a result of implicit racial bias in healthcare systems. Now, it wasn't the only cause of her death, but it was a contributor. That, I think, is quite a significant finding.
The cause of her death was septic shock, and I understand that her death was unconnected to her ongoing issues around vomiting and abdominal pain and dehydration, the issues which had brought her back and forwards to the hospital many times over the previous year or so. But what did the coroner have to say about when she came to the hospital on those numerous occasions and the care that she received, and then how that created a pattern?
Well, it's important to understand that Naomi was actually leaving Tumut and moving to Canberra away from her partner, who had to work in Tumut, just to get safe care. She did not feel safe at Tumut Hospital, and she wanted to go and live in Canberra, where the doctors and nurses treated her appropriately. And the coroner found that Naomi's low expectations of Tumut Hospital affected her decisions in relation to her medical care in the days and hours before she passed away. She felt unheard. She felt stereotyped as a drug user. She felt unsafe and was planning to have a baby elsewhere because she wasn't receiving adequate treatment. And the coroner said that those concerns were legitimate. That's what formed the basis of her findings of racism and implicit bias.
So the coroner found that her care was affected by unconscious and implicit bias or racism. And how significant is that finding?
Well, I think it's quite profound. I'm not aware of any other finding other than in the Day case, where it was relevant, of any judicial officer in a coronial setting making that kind of finding. But we know that there is racism in healthcare. It's a dirty secret that is not discussed because healthcare workers don't like to admit that it exists and it harms patients. But it does, and it was exposed by the coroner in this case.
So when she came to the hospital on numerous occasions, the coroner found, quote, Naomi Williams received, quote, brief symptomatic treatment as opposed to the necessary investigation and or specialised intervention of underlying causes. So they basically just brushed her off each time she walked into the hospital. Is that the crux of what the coroner found?
That is what the coroner found, but more importantly, the issue that Naomi's mother, Sharon, raised, that she was being stereotyped. They weren't taking her very serious underlying condition seriously. Naomi had lost kilos in weight during her pregnancy and in the weeks and months before she died. No one was monitoring that or taking it seriously. No one was sending her to a specialist, which is what she really needed. All they did was diminish her as a drug addict, and she wasn't.
Now, of course, the coroner made a number of recommendations. We're going to talk about the extent of those recommendations handed down on the 1st of July last year and how they've been implemented. But first, I'd like to discuss another coronial inquest, the one you've just been mentioning, where the family also wanted to raise issues of unconscious bias. Belinda Day, you're on the line from Southern New South Wales. Can you tell me about your mother, Tanya Day?
So Mum, you know, a proud Aboriginal woman, you know, she was 55 when she passed, so much more life to live. She was a loving mother and grandmother, you know, she adored her grandchildren.
She has four kids, right?
Five. We lost our younger brother when he was only 3 months old. So that was a traumatic incident that sort of lived with her throughout her life. And was very unfortunate. So, yeah, so there's four of us that have gone through the coronial process. But Mum, proud, not afraid to speak up for things that she thought were wrong, very much loved by community, intertwined with community, and, you know, whether it's in the kitchen cooking for community events, but, you know, just very much a vibrant personality.
Belinda, what happened to your mum on the 5th of December 2017?
So Mum would travel from Echuca to Melbourne quite regularly. On this occasion, she was leaving Echuca to go to Melbourne to meet Kimberly, our younger sister. She made it to Echuca Station and bought herself a ticket, boarded the bus before getting to Bendigo, where she boarded a train. So when she got on the train, a ticket inspector found her sleeping on the seat and made a rash decision, and you can see that from the findings, that he stereotyped Mum as a drunk Aboriginal woman and called for police to remove her off the train. So they got to Castlemaine where she was removed, and then she was taken back to a police cell where she was left for hours unattended and not looked after. And when they did enter the cell around 8 o'clock, they found a large oval-shaped bruise on Mum's head. So she'd fallen not long after being placed in that cell and had deteriorated.
So the CCTV footage found that she had fallen and hit her head on the concrete walls while she was in the police cell, and that was at around 5 o'clock.
Yes.
But this wasn't discovered, even though there were meant to be checks every 30 minutes. That's what is standard procedure. They never happened. And at 8 p.m. there was a physical check. Police noticed the bruise on her head and called an ambulance. She was taken to hospital. A scan revealed a massive brain bleed. She was transferred to Melbourne, operated on, but that was unsuccessful, and she died 17 days later, I think on the 22nd of December.
That's
right. You're listening to the Law Report on Radio National, and today we're looking at two very significant coronial inquests. One focused on Naomi Williams, a Wiradjuri woman, and the other, Yorta woman, Tanya Day, and I've just been speaking to her daughter, Belinda. Lawyer Monique Hurley, you work with the Human Rights Law Centre and you act for the Day family. And in April this year, the Victorian coroner, Caitlin English, handed down her findings. What were the key findings, Monique Hurley?
Thanks, Damien. So the coroner made a number of findings, and I'll just touch on some of the key ones. In relation to V-Line, which is the regional train provider in Victoria, the coroner found that the decision-making process by the V-Line ticket inspector was influenced by his unconscious bias, and that the decision to define Ms. Day as unruly and call for police rather than pursue other options was influenced by her Aboriginality.
It should be point out, right, as I understand from the evidence, the deceased was asleep. There were some conflicting reports about whether or not her feet were blocking the aisle, but there was no question of her being unruly or difficult or upsetting other passengers. And also there's no evidence that this ticket inspector had ever ejected a sleeping passenger from a train journey before this point in time. He had never done this.
That's correct. He gave evidence that even though he comes across about 3 sleeping passengers a week on the train, that Ms. Day was the first person that he had called the train driver, who then contacted the police and triggered the police intervention. This is the first time that he'd done that.
The coroner found that the ticket inspector was influenced by unconscious bias. What did the coroner find with respect to her treatment by Victoria Police?
So disappointingly, there was no finding of systemic racism on the police's part, but the coroner did make findings that the physical checks that were supposed to happen every 30 minutes in accordance with Victoria Police's own internal guidelines didn't happen, and that was shown through the CCTV footage. The coroner described the checks as inadequate and made a finding that the police failed to take proper care of Ms. Day as required by the guidelines, and that that was important because if the checks had been conducted, her deterioration may have been identified and actioned earlier.
What did the coroner have to say about the credibility of the police witnesses and possible indictable offences here?
So one of the police officers, the leading senior constable who was responsible for doing the physical checks in relation to Ms. Day, was found not to be a credible witness by the coroner. In the findings, the coroner noted that the accuracy of his custody module entries, which are essentially his record keeping regarding the observation and monitoring of Ms. Day, were concerning, and that that was because there wasn't much correlation between the CCTV footage and some of the entries he made in those records, which said that Ms. Day was moving around freely in circumstances when she wasn't. And so even though the Day family were disappointed that there was not a finding of systemic racism, the coroner said that an indictable offence may have been committed, and on that basis she referred the police officers involved in Ms. Day's death to the DPP for criminal investigation. And that's a really landmark decision, given that hundreds of Aboriginal people have died in police custody and no police officer has ever been held criminally responsible.
And have many such cases been referred to the prosecutors for investigation, or is this a first?
There's been not very many that have been referred to the DPP before, and we understand that no police officer has ever been held criminally responsible for an Aboriginal death in custody.
So this is quite a significant recommendation. Look, one of the other recommendations was to decriminalise the offence of public drunkenness because, you know, if somebody's asleep on a train, they're not kind of abusing anybody or committing any other crime but being inebriated in a public space. There's an understanding, I think, in most parts of the country that that shouldn't be a crime. What was the recommendation with respect to the offence of public drunkenness?
So the coroner, before the coronial inquest had even commenced, indicated that she would be recommending that the Victorian government repeal the offence of public drunkenness. That was a recommendation made by the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody almost 30 years ago. And the Victorian government has announced that they're committing to repealing that offence and enacting a public health response in its place. And while that's really commendable, I think it's really heartbreaking to know that if the Victorian government had have acted on the recommendations of the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, Ms. Day could still be alive today.
George Newhouse, can I just get you to talk very briefly about what you see as the parallels in the cases of Naomi Williams and Tanya Day?
Look, the two cases highlight how systemic and implicit bias can lead to the deaths of individuals. I think the coroners both made extremely powerful recommendations. I don't think that they gave us, in both cases, everything we wanted, but I believe that those recommendations are quite powerful and novel. But more importantly, the coroner in Victoria recommended that officers be charged, or certainly that they be referred to the DPP for charges. I think, unfortunately, in our case in New South Wales, the nurses and doctors weren't referred specifically for discipline. But apart from that, I think they run parallel.
In terms of the New South Wales coroner's recommendations, she talked about training of healthcare staff about high-risk pregnancies, strengthening the role of Aboriginal health liaison worker programs, considering adopting targets for employment of Indigenous health workers in numbers that are equivalent to their local proportion of the population, consideration about auditing the possibility of implicit bias, establishing targets for representation of Indigenous people on local health advisory committees, and look to, I think, New England Health, which apparently has a pretty highly regarded system in terms of developing culturally appropriate healthcare. Sharon Williams and Cheryl Penrith, have you met with any officials in New South Wales or had any discussions with authorities about implementing the recommendations of the coroner from July last year?
Yes, we've met with the manager of Aboriginal Health, Mr. Murrumbidgee Health District, as well as the CEO and other senior staff. We've had two formal meetings at this stage. The last one was March this year. We talked a bit about, well, they presented us with the Aboriginal Workforce Action Plan, and we had a look through the focus areas. For me, because I live in Canberra, I don't have a lot of contact with the community, but I think Cheryl could probably talk more. Cheryl has a lot to do with the community as a respected Wiradjuri elder.
I think, well, we just talked about that meeting we had in March. It was just before we all went into lockdown, so it was pretty much you know, we had some momentum and we'd made some progress about what we wanted to see and what our expectations were that come from, you know, how we move forward. And then we went into lockdown. For us, we've got people that have now been moved onto those committees, but we still have to be on lookout for what's happening because, you know, I've got grandchildren that live here and I've got elders that live here in this community. We can't risk these things happening again, and we need them to start to implement the recommendations from the inquest.
So, so far, you're happy with the recommendations, but so far they haven't yet proceeded as they haven't been implemented as far as you're concerned.
They've put on some new staff. We don't want people just to be in admin. We want them to start thinking about developing some young people into being health workers and encouraging people to become health professionals and nurses and doctors. These are some of the things that we want to see for the future. But even the biggest thing about the hospital is how do we make an attitude change for people if they don't think that there's a problem? How do we make people feel like they're welcome at the hospital? So these are all the things that we've been discussing, but we want to see some movement on that. And we'll always be watching what happens because we've got an interest in the future of this hospital. And, you know, they're just about to start rebuilding a new hospital. So wouldn't it be good to rebuild a new hospital and rebuild the expectations and rebuild the trust from the community to the hospital?
Absolutely. Belinda Day, I know the findings and recommendations with respect to your mother's death were only handed down in April this year. Have there been any steps towards implementation?
We had the coroner foreshadow that she was going to recommend the abolishment of the public intoxication law. So there has been some work. They have got an expert reference panel. We have been consulted in relation to that. So they are working on the public health response and what that may look like. But obviously with the lockdown, we haven't had any news in relation to the new recommendations from the coroner. So it's sort of just biding our time. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're just hopeful that people can reflect on what's happened here and make sure those recommendations are implemented because we want to stop this happening again. You know, it was really hurtful for us through the coronial process that often witnesses were asked, would they do anything different, you know, knowing how everything had panned out and what happened and the end result. And quite often the answer was no. So that's not good enough for us. So we're going to continue to fight and continue to seek justice for Mum. And these recommendations are only the beginning of the journey to ensure that we have a safe future for all of our Aboriginal communities, particularly in Victoria, because we are so far behind the eight ball. We need to improve so that this happens to no one again.
And the recommendations you're talking about there, it's kind of the training for people on V-Line and other public servants, and also Victoria Police, making sure that they comply with their own manuals and their own procedures around treating people who are intoxicated and all detained people with respect and according to the kind of the rules which are required to check in on them every 30 minutes.
Absolutely, because, you know, people are vulnerable and we need to be able to ensure that how they're taken care of is done in a safe and adequate way.
But can I ask Belinda, and then I'll ask the same question to Sharon and Cheryl, what is your view and the view of the Day family about the coronial inquest process? Has it been a worthwhile one?
Look, I think at the end of the day, we were pretty pleased with the outcomes. It has been about justice for Mum. It's been 2 years of us having to go through this process, and it's been long and arduous and very painful, as I'm sure it has been for the Williams family. You know, I think we've been fortunate that we have had a coroner that's been brave enough to make some strong recommendations. I think that as long as the recommendations are implemented, then it has been worthwhile and that we can make some positive change to ensure that we can protect people.
And Sharon and Cheryl, would you echo those sentiments? What are your views about the coronial process?
I feel the same way. As hard as it was having your whole life in public and, you know, having to go through that whole process, but I needed to find out the truth because my daughter knew that she wasn't being treated properly. Both of these beautiful women, their deaths could have been prevented. The truth needed to be told. I wanted justice. I think someone needs to be held accountable for the death of my daughter and my unborn grandson. And for me too, it's about change.
and national change, you know, so our elders and our families and our children don't have to go through the same experience that we had to go through.
A quick final word from the two lawyers, George Newhouse and Monique Hurley, about whether or not there are any further steps or any further legal processes which might arise out of these coronial inquests.
Yes, I think there definitely are. We're investigating accountability processes in terms of professional standards and possibly civil liability actions. But I'd just like to say this. It shouldn't be for Indigenous or First Nations families to have to hold the system accountable. It shouldn't be their responsibility to ensure that the coroner's recommendations are enforced. This is something that the state should be taking up voluntarily and quickly so that we can ensure that lives are saved in the future and that this never happens again.
Monique Hurley?
The coronial inquest was not the end of the road for the Day family in terms of them seeking justice for their mum, and they're currently considering all of their options moving forward. And I agree with George that it shouldn't be left to Aboriginal families like Tanya Day's to fight for justice through the coronial inquest process. I think it's a very important process. But for Aboriginal people, and particularly for Aboriginal deaths in police custody, it's often too little too late, and it can't bring back their mum. And governments across Australia should be more proactive in identifying and fixing discriminatory laws that persist today and result in Aboriginal people being disproportionately arrested, locked up and dying in custody.
Before I let you go, very quickly, and I'll ask this to Belinda as well, in this Reconciliation Week, what do you want people to take away from this discussion about Tanya and Naomi? Sharon?
Well, like, we've got to have some hard conversations if we want any form of reconciliation in this country. Truth needs to be told. Yeah.
Belinda?
Yeah, I agree with that. Certainly, I think it's reflecting these two circumstances that they should never have happened. So we need to take a moment and take a step back and look at how we are operating as a country. And like George said, you know, racism is alive and well. You know, it shouldn't be a dirty little secret. We need to call it out, and we need to address the issues that are causing our Aboriginal communities and our families to go through this trauma.
And the parallel issue around the way they're treated by our healthcare system. Look, we're going to have to end it there. Belinda Day, daughter of Tanya Day, Sharon Williams, mother of Naomi Williams, and Cheryl Penrith, Sharon's cousin, and I guess Naomi's great aunt. And before them, lawyer Monique Hurley from the Human Rights Law Centre, lawyer George Newhouse. Thank you all for speaking to the Law Report and discussing these very, very important issues on Reconciliation Week.
Thanks, Damien.
Thank you.
Thanks, Damien.
Thank you.
Yes,
all the best, Belinda.
Love and respect to you all.
Thank you. Maybe we'll catch up again someday.
Yes, that would be good.
Thank you. See you all.
Take care. Bye.
See you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.